Hey everybody, this is Alex Lindsay and this is Mac Break Weekly number 9. We have quite a cast here today. Coming in from somewhere else in San Francisco, we've got Jason Snow from Macworld Magazine. Hey, Jason.
Hey there.
It's really, really great to have you. And also we have coming in from Seattle, we've got Scott Bourne. It's Gig Harbor, right? No, it's not. Not Seattle.
It's Gig Harbor, but since nobody knows where that is, we always say Seattle.
And they're trying to keep it that way. It's kind of like...
Yes, we are.
And also, we have Jan Kabili. Now, Jan, where are you coming in from?
I'm in beautiful Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder.
You can't get any better.
27 square miles surrounded by reality. So I used to live in Boulder. I used to live behind Ideal Market.
Oh, that's where I shop.
Oh yeah, so that was a long ago and a very wonderful time. So
I'm still living out my teenage years now.
And Boulder is just such a great place. So so we've got a little bit of news. I think that the big news. I mean, you guys can tell me if you think this is big news, but the DVD John has cracked Fairplay. Now, people have been talking about cracking Fairplay for a while, but he's not trying to let us use it for free like he usually does. He's actually offering to license it. He's going to make it available to anyone who, I guess, the highest bidder or a handful of bidders to be able to actually use it. Now, is this going to work? Jason, do you think that he can actually pull this off?
I'm not sure that this is news.
Okay.
Real networks, I mean, didn't they have a Fairplay compatible DRM that they came out with that sort of didn't go anywhere? I think in large part because Apple said, you know, we can just disable it in the next iPod software update and make all of your DRM not work right. I mean, that there is, I'm not sure, and I don't know how this differs, how DVD John's sort of re-engineering of Fairplay is different from what Real Networks did, but you know, Real Networks made this claim like more than a year ago, and sort of nothing ever came of it.
Yeah, that's the question that I have as we see this come up. I mean, it was bouncing around a lot over the last couple of days on variety of online sites, and the question I have is, number one, is it legal to do it? It's a reverse engineer, a copy protection. And number two is, can't Apple just continually adjust this? I mean, if I was a licensor, why would I want to actually dig into this? Scott, do you have any?
I mean, Apple would
Go ahead, Jason.
Sorry about that. Apple would have to analyze it and find out what made it unique and then disable it. But unless DVD John could get it to be unrecognizable when compared to a legitimate file of some version from iTunes store. If he could do that, he's won, I think, other than if they could sue him. But that's the big question, is can you make it, can you re-engineer it so well that Apple can't even detect that it's not one of theirs? And I'm not sure about that one.
I also think that there's an issue of, you know, even if they made it indistinguishable, all Apple has to do is add one flag every single time that they do an update, and it seems that to me that it would be disabled unless it's a standard that's not moving. It just seems like it'd be a very high risk for people who wanted to necessarily license it.
It is risky, but you know, you got to remember that stuff downloaded the day one of the iTunes store still plays. So there has to be backward compatibility. They can update their file format, but the iPod and iTunes still play those old purchase files. So if John could make them match one of those formats exactly, then Apple would have a hard time disabling it. But you know, that's only one approach, because there's also like the lawsuit approach. If Apple says that they're, you know, this somehow, and I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know. But you know, is there some way that Apple can say this is reverse engineering and it's, you know, it's not legal because this is patented, or I don't know. That's a mystery. Okay.
Well, can I say, there's something I didn't tell you guys. I was a lawyer for 15 years. And I try not to ever talk about it. And yeah. But, you know, from the little time I've spent sort of looking at this, I think that probably a case could be made. Whether it would fly or not, who knows? But the real issue is that it could bollocks up the works and stop John from doing what he wants to for long enough that it may become a non-issue. And that's virtually what happened with Real and with Navio. They kind of just faded away because Apple kept posturing that it was going to sue.
And that's one of the things. I mean, any large company can, you know, oftentimes jump in there and say, well, we're just going to hold you up in court for quite some time before you can actually do anything. And no one's going to want to put money into the licensing scheme if it's unknown whether it's actually they're actually going to be able to actually use it. I mean, that seems to be the danger there. But do you think, Jan, do you think that he has any case at all, though, saying that this is not some kind of infringement of the DCMC or DCMA?
Well, I looked at the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and it's not my area. It never was. They didn't even have that when I was a lawyer. But it says you can't circumvent a technological measure that controls access to a work protected under the title. And it even tries to define what circumventing a technological measure is. And I think there would be an argument under the language of that statute that going ahead and reverse engineering would violate that. So who knows? I mean, there's also case law, and somebody pointed out on one of the sites that there was the Kinectix and Sony matter back in 2000. Do you remember that one?
Where?
And apparently Kinectix went and copied some of the BIOS from Sony PlayStation and used it to make their own machine, and that court, although I think it was before this act was in place, said that was okay.
Right, and a lot of adjustments that are made. Now, in a larger question, and this kind of ties into the Intel calling for open standards. Do we think that? I mean, this constantly comes up when I talk to people who talk about PC versus Apple. I mean, the PCs in general versus Apple is. Do we think that this enclosed society that Apple or structure that Apple tends to build is that in the long run is that going to be detrimental to Apple or is it to their advantage? So I mean, this is a bigger question that Intel's opening, where they said that their motto is to let Apple be Apple and they're happy to serve them. This is according to InfoWorld. But they they really hope that people use more open standards to allow more interconnectivity between hardware devices. The question really is Apple, the way Apple approaches this kind of stuff, is that good for Apple in the long run? Because the argument, of course, is that it makes it more operable between Apple devices. It's easier for them to make that work smoothly if they don't have to deal with everybody else. Or is it going to eventually get Apple into trouble, either through monopolistic attacks or just because people will, once they start working around them, will the market grows past them? What do you guys think? Is this good or bad for Apple?
Well, should we say for the consumer too? I mean, that's the other question that comes up: is it good or bad for the consumer that Apple has got this sort of dominance, and what's good about it and what's bad about it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, because do we actually benefit as users from this close? I mean, because sometimes people can argue, and I argue this often, is that that my experience as a user oftentimes is better because with a Mac, I can just simply just plug stuff in; it's just going to work. And if Apple, we've talked about this in the past once, if Apple made a phone, I would buy it the next day because I know it would work with everything else that I'm doing. I don't have that guarantee on a PC. So the argument is that it's a good experience for me as a consumer because of that. But do I get so much less choice that it is, that I'm getting locked into something that isn't to my advantage? You were going to say something, Scott?
Well, I was just going to say what Jason said. I think the real question is, what's the user's benefit? And we need to always ask these questions from the standpoint of the user. And I think the fact that the Macs are now open to Windows through Parallels and Bootcamp probably provides just about the perfect balance of openness. We need to keep the system closed to some degree to protect those of us who are pure Mac people that like the Mac experience, but open it up just enough so that we don't have to worry about any trust things and that people who want to do other things can get in there and play. I think that's about all you need to do for now. I do believe, sometimes the Apple stuff drives me crazy when you talk to an Apple guy at a trade show and he can't even tell you what division he works in for fear that the SS troopers are going to come storming out of the back of the wall someplace. But other than that, I think that they probably have served themselves reasonably well doing it the way they've done it because, we all like to use Macs.
And, you know, this whole question of openness is a little bit of a red herring, really, because the iPod and iTunes are open in the sense that, you know, it's not just – a lot of times in the media this gets portrayed as, you know, if you don't buy it from Apple, you can't play it on the iPod, when the reality is the iPod plays MP3s and it plays WAV files. It plays all sorts of files that don't have DRM, but it does play them. And so it's not – as locked down as I think sometimes people make it out to be. And I really kind of love the irony of the fact that DVD John, who made his name as somebody who decried DRM and said, you know, this information wants to be free and consumers want to be able to have control over it and let's strip all the DRM off. And now he's moved to California and he's got a company whose entire goal is to slap DRM onto material on a player that will accept media that's free of DRM. It's just bizarre. And I guess he's got dollar signs in his eyes, but it's weird because, you know, the iPod is open. It plays MP3s. It's not hard to figure out.
Well, and most of the stuff that I have on my iPod are MP3s generated from my CDs. You know,
absolutely.
So I do buy some stuff mostly when I'm traveling and I just feel like listening to some song or whatever. But most of my, you know, 95% are from my own CD library that I had built up before I had iTunes. And so, what were we going to say, Jen?
Well, I was going to say we talked about consumers, that's us, and we've talked about the computer companies, but we haven't talked about the content producers, and they're also really important. And then the question comes up, does DRM hurt them or help them? In a sense, it hurts, it helps them, but then in another sense, it hurts them. You know, I think that some musicians feel that if their customers are feeling that they are not getting what they want, that they're getting, you know, proverbially, you know what, that doesn't help the musician either. So there's that other entity to think about too.
Yeah, and I think that I personally think that's actually the Achilles heel of big media, quote unquote, is that a lot of the smaller producers, us included, at MacBreak, you know, we don't put any DRM on. I mean, we're doing Creative Commons, and the real issue is that as we look, go downstream, if DRM continues to be hard to deal with, and I think Apple is really the only one that has a workable DRM solution at the moment. If it continues to be difficult to use, and I can't use it on these different devices, will people start to go towards non-DRM content? I mean, Creative Commons now has hundreds of thousands of licenses. You know, people are able to move that stuff around, and the real question is does DRM start to really make it hard for big media to move forward into this new market by making it more difficult to act, you know, and people just going, well, there's content that's almost as good or maybe as good for my niche without having to deal with all this stuff.
I don't care.
Did you talk about the big names?
I'm sorry?
we need to work out a system here where we don't talk over each other. Like, you want to give us a hint who you want to
Jason.
Talk next?
Yeah, well, the other funny thing is that this, you know, it's not about the names. This situation, you know, the big names can get on iTunes. And right. iTunes really exists as a conduit for the big names and even kind of smallish names to get their content, whether it's music or video. And, you know, I think the movie store is going to open up and be a lot broader as we go along here onto iTunes and sell it and make money. And Apple takes a cut, but they, you know, but Apple's also providing the service and they're providing the bandwidth. And so who is this for exactly? I mean, other than to stick it to Apple. I mean, Apple's already got a store. Apple's happy to have people come in and sell their stuff on the store. You know, the big names are on the store. So it's really unclear to me exactly what this is about other than sort of saying we want to stick it to Apple because, you know, Apple's provided this, you know, and if you want to bypass DRM altogether, you can get on the iPod too. So, you know, this scenario that John is talking about here is basically saying we want to be free of the cruel yoke of the iTunes store, and I'm not sure anybody is really saying.
Well,
that.
I don't even think he's saying that. I think he's saying that we're providing somebody. We're theoretically hoping to provide somebody with access to 90% of the for sale market. You know, I mean, I think that's the concern. You know, that's what they're trying to do.
Right, somebody who isn't Apple.
Right. I mean, it's not so much that they even do anything to Apple. They just want access to it. Apple's got a lockdown, which ironically was created by someone other than... I mean, Apple didn't want to do DRM in the first place. I mean, they were happy with MP3s. It was, you know, a lot of the... You know, to get these big companies into iTunes, they had to figure out a DRM, and they sorted something out that really worked, and now it happens to have locked people in. It's funny. It just doesn't seem as calculating as... you know, as Apple may have sounded, you know, it's to their advantage at this point, but, you know, it wasn't created that way. Scott?
I'm never going to worry about downloading music again because I just bought Mahjong, and so far I haven't been able to get off of it. I just play Mahjong all day long now.
Sound like my grandmother.
So,
well, you know, there's a
Go ahead.
There's another aspect to it, which is the advent of ITV. Mm-hmm. And John may not be doing this for idealistic reasons. He may be doing it because he sees a lot of money in the offing there. If he can sell it to those people who want to get their stuff coming through ITV into your living room, then, you know, he may join that list of the richest in the world.
But who are those people? I mean, because again, you're going to be able to go, the people who've got stuff to sell, who are theoretically the ones who want to DRM it, are going to be able to go through iTunes. So, you know, I don't think it's about the content owners here. I think this is about him trying to sell to people who want to set up their own stores, right, and take on iTunes. And I'm not even sure that's a viable option here. I think you're right that he's got his eyes on the ITV, but I still am not seeing the big picture here of why this is, you know, because it's not for those people. Those people are going to be able to get their videos on the store and sell them. It's only a matter of time, you know. So who is this for? This is for somebody like Real Networks or a smaller version of that to put up a little kind of mom and pop video store that's, you know, I guess you could do that and be ITV compatible, but you can put out a file that's ITV compatible now. It just won't have DRM on it.
Right, I think that there is a growing push. I know that from, and not so much on the DRM side, but for podcasters, I think that there's a lot of people who would like to really be able to sell stuff either particularly through iTunes. I mean, they can sell it on their own now, but I think some of them are concerned about having their own DRM. Some of them would not. You know, I think that even though people can get onto iTunes, I think one of the concerns is that I know in the big media is allowing iTunes to keep on building. You know, they really got their butts handed to them, you know, with when they tried to renegotiate the price of songs. And I think that there's a concern that, you know, Apple is now the seventh largest song, you know, music reseller in the United States. I mean, is it fifth now?
Fifth, and Jobs said next year they'll be fourth.
Yeah, and I think that there's a concern. I think what big media, while they have access to the iTunes Music Store, I think what they're afraid of is putting all their eggs into that basket again, allowing someone who has an enormous amount of control over their music future having the same thing over their movie future. I think is something that a lot of them would like to see it being sold somewhere else, but still have access to the iPod and still have DRM. I mean, I think they kind of want everything in that, but I think that that's a lot of why we've seen them try to build up other things, the other movie download sites, the Amazons, the, you know, all these other things, is to try to diversify their exposure. Jason, you were going to say something?
I think I can see your point, and I think you may be right that that's what they think. But at the same time, you made the assumption that they really had it handed to them. But, you know, would you not say that the existence of iTunes has generated money for that industry? Oh. I mean, I don't think it's transferred it or sort of made the sales be less valuable because they used to be Amazon sales and now they're Apple sales. I think they've Apple's created a market here. So it's, in some ways, it's not about, you know, it's about being vulnerable and not having somebody to play against Apple, I suppose, more than anything else. I'm not sure if DVD John's kind of alternate DRM is ever going to be that. It's much more likely that you're going to see it through, you know, Microsoft's Zune or you know, who knows what, some other thing that is a competitor to, you know, that's outside the Apple ecosystem. Well, I mean, it's funny because everybody just wants to break into the iPod. It's like, well, give me the iPod. I want the iPod.
Yeah,
I
think that's their argument. I think they're flat wrong. I mean, I think that Apple is the best thing that happened to them when it comes to selling this stuff. And I think that if they had listened to Apple on the movies, I think the movies are overpriced either on Amazon and on iTunes. You know, I think that the $9.99 maybe makes sense. I really think that the $14.99 is too high. And I think Apple had to, had to make that compromise. I think that if the movie industry is listen to Apple a little bit more, I think that they would make a lot more money. You know, so I don't think that they're correct. I think that's what they're worried about. And I think that their, you know, their head is too far shoved up into a dark area that they can't, you know, figure out which way is up. So now, Scott, now you said that, speaking of the Zune that Jason was talking about, Scott, you said you saw one in the wild?
I saw one. Well, I don't know how wild it was. I was at the announcement. for all I know, it was actually a tame Zune. And we were at the Zune Zoo in Redmond, Washington during the announcement. And why don't you mention that article we found that said the five reasons
why the Zune would kill
the iPod?
In Tech News World, they say there's five reasons that the Zune may kill the iPod. Market forces. That it's the collective power of XP, sharing fever. You can share songs back and forth between, between your Zunes, more content in a bigger screen, which is pretty funny. I'm sure Scott will.
Same number of pixels,
just a slightly larger screen. And it's surprisingly cool. According to Tech News World, it's surprisingly cool.
Okay, well, I'm surprised that someone would say it's cool. Yeah, these are guys who think that Linux, is probably something that everybody wants to have in their port. here's the thing. Okay, now let's kind of. I'm not going to go through those in order, but here's the five reasons why the Zune is going to end up like every other iPod competitor. Number one, this wireless thing. It is just boo-rah. I mean, you can't sync wirelessly with it.
Right.
When I found out that all you can do is sort of stand in Starbucks by yourself and hold your Zune up and go, anybody? Looking for somebody else to sync. You can't use it to sync up your songs or anything like that, so that's stupid. Number two, there's no podcast support. Hello? Yeah. That's kind of important. You can't get a podcast. They're saying third parties will have to figure that out. Well, that's just wonderful. The third thing that's just really dumb is this point system. I'm old. I can barely figure out how to buy something on iTunes at 99 cents. Now I got to count points? It's like going to Kroger's and having to use a special card to get the special deal. It should just be money.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the form factor style deal. You know, let's look at the iPods. We've got the Nano, we got the Shuffle, we've got the iPod with video. We've got several choices. With Microsoft, you get one form factor, and it reminds me of the old Cadillac ads. Comes in any color you want as long as it's black. And then, speaking of color, here is the final straw that ate the camel, let alone break his back. The freaking thing is brown.
Well, only some of them are brown, to be fair. And I have to...
And the box it comes in is brown besides.
And the click wheel is fake.
Well, I have to admit, someone who remained nameless let Leo and I play with one when we were at the podcasting convention. And I actually, I thought that it was actually kind of fun. You know, I mean, I definitely enjoyed it more than I thought I would. But I did find they have this wheel that's round. And it's not a wheel, though. It's just you click up and down. It's just a little round piece. And the problem, of course, is that we're all trained. And so every time I put my thumb down on it, I started going around in circles and nothing was happening. You know, it's just, I was like lost. I was like, oh, I can't make it work. And so so it was, but the brown, I will say that I thought that the brown didn't look that bad. Jason, have you seen one yet?
I have not held one in my hands. We're gonna go buy one and try it out, but I haven't seen one.
So it's
make sure it's returnable, Jason.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I hope so for the sake of everybody who buys it, thinking it's basically an iPod. I mean, it's a Microsoft iPod. What's it gonna be? It may be the second best digital music player ever made, but it's. That's still second best, right?
And the I mean, I think that a lot of hope is being put into the hopefully that you're going to see Soapbox really turn off. I mean, Soapbox is still in beta, and there's a lot of viral. They're working on some viral pieces there related to that. But still, I mean, getting stuff from Soapbox, for instance, to the Zune is not nearly as easy. And I think that I've been looking at Soapbox a little bit and. Which I think is actually pretty cool, but I think that one of the big problems they're going to have is, once again, and people have heard me say this over and over and over again, but without a net application is a great thing. A web page managing media is not so great when you want to interface with any kind of piece of hardware.
On the show, we've talked a lot about consumer sort of interest and consumer choice, and I don't envy Microsoft the situation they're in, and I understand they want to compete with Apple, and that, good for them, but the consumer need, basically the Zune's consumer need statement is, it's not an iPod. Well, I'm not sure consumers really want not an iPod. I think they want an iPod, and that's a tough thing to fight. And so it's like, it's not an iPod, but it's kind of like an iPod, but it's not an iPod, and that's why you want it. Because you won't be locked into Apple's whole ecosystem. You'll be locked into Microsoft's whole ecosystem.
And we all know that's better.
Wait a second. Well, if I've got to be locked into one, why don't I be locked into the one that 90% of the people who have this product have? I mean, right. It's really tough, and I don't envy them their task, because I don't, you know, they're not really that likely to succeed. Plus, they're losing, what, $50 per unit? So, good luck.
No, I agree with you.
They're going to make it up on volume.
Yeah. Well, I'll go out on a limb and just say that I think it's just butt ugly. And if think, you know, the people they think are going to run up to each other, sort of pointing their zunes at each other to share music, are probably teenagers. And teenagers want something that looks cool. Yeah. This thing does not look cool. It looks like my father's car, you know?
Well, and I think that people do have to, it isn't about being not an iPod. It really has to be something that is, it's got to be way better than an iPod. I mean, someone has to do something that is significantly better, and there are places to improve. Like, the wireless is really cool if you could do something than sync with other people who have it. I mean, if you were able to, for instance, download your songs on wireless, use VoIP, for instance, the Milo is able to do, you know, Sony's Milo is able to, you know, you're able to use VoIP with it. If you're able to surf the web or get access to at least the videos and everything else, be able to download them, that creates something. If you had GPS built in, if you had a phone built in, all those things.
Sure. Share your playlist, or listen, I always want to have it that I can tune in people who are around me, and if they let me, if they have that setting turned on, listen to what they're listening to right then. I would love that kind of a feature, so people could say, hey, if you're curious what I'm listening to, tune me in, and they would be able to do it. There's so many ways the iPod can be improved. You're totally right. And I look at the Zune, and you know, all I see is, well, it's really just an iPod that isn't an iPod.
Right, and so I think that's the thing that is, you know, if people up the ante a little bit, I think that they could compete with Apple, but just doing another player that's like Apple but not under the Apple moniker, I don't think it's not going to go anywhere.
Well, good. So we wrote
I mean, you know, I'm hoping I personally would like to see more competition, because I think that there are lots of things that could be improved.
Absolutely.
With the iPod. I think there's a lot of things. And I think we would see, you know, I think that Apple has gotten into a point where, I mean, and I think this happened to Microsoft, you know, and this is why Microsoft is in the position it's in right now, is that Microsoft got so far ahead and had so little competition for market share that they just kind of produced things at a leisurely pace, however they felt like it. They got it going. And what I'm afraid of is seeing, you know, Apple produces new iPods, for instance, at a leisurely pace. They know what everybody wants now. They know what we're all waiting for, you know, being able to see bigger movies and have wireless and GPS and phones and everything else. And they'll get to it when they're good and ready, because no one's even close. If someone was closer, pushing them harder, you know, they'd have to innovate faster.
Yeah, and we may actually see wireless features in the iPod sooner than we would have otherwise, because Zune has that checkbox.
Right.
Even if they're bad, they're there. And it'll be interesting to see if what Apple does, you know, puts the Zune to shame. I would imagine that when they do wireless features, they will put the Zune to shame, but that's the mystery. Hopefully they're pushing them there, because you're right, Apple should be pushed. Competition is a good thing.
I mean, now they're very comfortable milking, you know, as much as they can out of every hardware, you know, which is good for their profits and good for their you know, their investors, just not as good for us. I want my iPhone. So anyway,
Alex, you cannot play Mahjong on this.
So,
but what I want to know is, I can't envision how people are going to use this, and I'd love to know. Perhaps I'm missing something, and you guys have an idea. I mean, do you really think you're going to be walking down the street and like see someone coming toward you, and ask them if they have a Zune in their pocket, and if so, whip it out and point it at me so I can listen to your songs? Or is
more
it just
likely
going to be for?
They're going to have a special secret pocket in their vest. They're going to be putting the Zune in there so no one sees it, and pressing the sync button, hoping somebody else walks by as one.
Not that Scott's being rough or anything. So, so now, to move on to another thing that's going to push up against what Apple's working on that might have a better chance. I don't know. This is in the front page of Mac World, actually, today I saw the Sage TV Media Center software coming to the Mac. Now, Jason, can you give us some background on the Sage TV?
Not a lot. I mean, it's basically software that's going to come to the Mac. It works with tuner hardware. Mm-hmm. I think it isn't a tuner itself. It works with tuner hardware that you attach to the Mac or a PC. And it works, you know, it's essentially like the ITV combo that, you know, that Elgato sells. The only difference is that with Sage TV, they also have a remote component. So in addition to setting it up and letting you like record shows or watch TV on your Mac, you can connect to it remotely and play back a show that your Mac recorded or stream live TV. So it makes it sort of like a combination of like an iTV and maybe like a Slingbox kind of
thing. Okay. And there's been, and it's been pretty successful on the PC side, right? I mean, it's done okay over there.
Well, I mean, I'd never heard of it before today, right. So I don't know how successful it could have been. I mean, obviously, you know, it's a matter of degrees. Nobody's really figured out how to do this right. I think of all of these, Slingbox is the only one that I've even heard of, and that's because they have a pretty, you know, decent ad budget in their advertising a lot.
Right.
And I have a Slingbox, and it's cool.
Yeah, and I've used a fair bit of the iTV, you know, the what is now, I guess, the Magit. Miglia, is that right?
There's a whole bunch of them. The Miglia HD, right, and there's the iTV from Elgato, and those are cool.
I really enjoy those. But of course, a lot of us are wondering, you know, what's going to happen, and we've seen this DirecTV now is talking about being able to move stuff from your PC to your. I mean, I think everybody is moving that direction, but you know, I don't think anybody's done it well yet, and we'll see how quickly the iTV, you know, comes out. So. I think that's always going to be the big question. So those, I think, are the... Did anyone have any other big stories or larger stories? I don't even know if those were headliners this week.
Oh, here's a little one. Do you know what today is?
What is today?
It's International Kill DRM Day.
Oh, that's right.
Something like that.
Back to DRM we are.
Okay.
It is.
20 minutes of DRM wasn't enough.
I have a CDRW disc that I use... only for one task, which is I erase it, I burn whatever I just bought from the iTunes store, I re-rip it into MP3, and then I erase the disc and start again. And that's how I kill my DRM, so that I've got some DRM-free versions of my iTunes tracks to play. Because I've got a squeeze box from Slim Devices, and you know, like anything that isn't made by Apple, it won't play those. So CDRW, it's old technology, and it works great at stripping the DRM out. And the quality is still okay.
Yeah, I think that people can work around it. I mean, I work around most of this stuff pretty quickly. In similar fashions, although I should be using CDRWs. I've just been using CDRs. I mean, that's 50. You know, I guess it cost me another 50 cents. I do them in groups.
It's like 4 cents per disc or something now. They're cheap.
Yeah, it's nothing.
I just happen to have a CDRW, and you know, it's less plastic that I'm throwing away. Yeah. I guess
now just little things that are coming out this week. Has anyone seen what do people think of this new .Mac email UI? Does anyone use .Mac's web interface?
I do.
Yeah. Do you like
it? Well, here's the good news. My .Mac account broke a couple of months ago. I could receive email, but I couldn't send it. And Apple kind of puts in very bold letters on their website, we don't support .Mac even though we take your $100. Mm-hmm. So they wouldn't help me. And I sent them an email saying, I know you don't support it, which is why I won't be renewing because it doesn't work anymore. But then when they did the update, now it magically works. So for me, the good news was that it works again. Right. And I don't really think there's anything special about what .Mac provides in the way of a mail client that you can't get from other things, other than it does offer some syncing things that are cool for Mac users that have to deal with syncing this or that feature. Other than that, I mean, you know, you can use Gmail, you can use any number of free services. I don't know that .Mac is going to be that relevant unless they do something to ramp it up just a little bit
more. Well, I think what they're showing this week is the preview in the new UI, which is really looks a lot more like the mail interface. So it's not just a web interface, which is totally, in my opinion, unusable. I don't do web mail very much, and it just drives me crazy. But allows you to drag and drop functions and a lot of the other things that you would normally have within the mail app. I guess this is coming soon. I don't think it's actually I don't believe it's actually out yet.
You know, I think I might give it a try. It's basically to move over from Gmail to that, and every so often when my subscription comes up, I wrestle with myself about whether I'm going to pay another $99. I fork the money over, and then I usually don't use the services. And the thing I would like to use the most is the syncing services, and they just don't work as much as I can see. They don't work for me. Nothing happens. So if there were something that I could use, then I would feel more justified in forking over my $99. So I think I would take a look at that.
I use my .Mac a lot. And I do the syncing, and then I also just use it for an easy place to put stuff up for people to grab, although because of Pixel Core, we have our own servers. And I think if I was without the Pixel Core, I'd be using it constantly. And I actually pay more than $99. I have like lots of drive space and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that I have found that I've used it less and less, and I think they do need to rejuvenate it. Jason, do you have any sense of whether they're going to push .Mac any harder?
I don't know. I mean, they don't talk about it a whole lot, but undoubtedly when Leopard comes out, they'll add even more .Mac features. I mean, that's really the reason I think why most people pay for .Mac is because there are easy syncing features that, you know, I think work for most people, maybe not for Jan, but for a lot of people. And you know, Apple makes it very hard to sync with a source other than .Mac, but very easy to sync with .Mac. And that, you know, and so when Leopard comes out, not only is that an OS upgrade, but it'll also be an inducement to continue paying for .Mac. And I would imagine Apple makes a lot of money on .Mac because it doesn't seem like they put huge amounts of effort into it, into marketing it or into developing it. I know they, I mean, they do develop it, but, you know, for... you could replicate a lot of what it provides for free on the net or for really cheap. And so, you know, it's a convenience thing. And you know, it's interesting. We were talking today in an editorial meeting about doing a story about .Mac and kind of digging into it and comparing it to what else is out there because, you know, they've got a lot of competition. The one thing that they don't have is that, you know, the people who make .Mac are in tight with the people who make Mac OS X because they work for the same company. And that's, you know, that's a pretty big advantage they've got.
Yeah, having that all wired in, I have to admit, when I break it out, I mean, when I think about it as $100 when it comes up due, it seems like a lot of money. But when I think about it as $8 a month, you know, it's I don't need to use it that much to make it worth it.
And if you buy your renewal on Amazon, it's like $70.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can buy a box, a .Mac box on Amazon, and it's free Super Saver shipping. Here's a little tip, because I just did this. And then turn off auto-renew on your credit card on .Mac, and when you get the box, you basically type in the code, and it renews your .Mac, so you can actually do it for a lot less than $99.
That's tasty. Yeah, we know that Amazon's always out there cutting corners for us. Also, 10.4.8 has been released. This is improves networking in the Finder. Anything major with this release? Was there anything that was really important, or is it just kind of a? Are they just?
I think the most notable feature was the was scroll wheel zooming, which if you didn't know that it was turned on, if you had like screen zooming turned on by default and you didn't notice, it adds the ability, which is kind of cool, to zoom into your screen with your scroll wheel. I had one of my editors was freaked out this morning because she was mistakenly held down the modifier key while she turned her scroll wheel, and all of a sudden she zoomed in like close. She's like, what's going on? What happened? And it's, so I think some people are going to get creeped out by that. But, you know, I think that may be the biggest new feature in 10.4.8.
There's a couple of things. Aperture is completely dependent upon the 10.4.8 release because all the stuff relative to the raw conversion is handled by the GPU. It's all fit into the OS, and all the new camera modules, etc., are delivered through 10.4.8. So those who use Aperture are going to really be happy about it, because if you don't have 10.4.8, you can't upgrade to 1.5 in Aperture. And to piggyback on what Jason said, I think this scroll thing is really cool. If you know, get into your 50s like me, and you can't see the type on the 30-inch Apple Cinema display as good as you used to, you can scroll right in. But I'll give you a tip that you may not even know, because this, I sort of figured this one out by accident, as I often do. You can actually do the same thing. If you don't have the tracking mouse, you can do it on a laptop with the trackpad. You can do the two-finger scroll and hold down the modifier key, and it works just like you had the trackball.
I have to admit that that's where I feel like an old person, where I just can't stand my trackpad doing anything other than the basic mouse stuff. And anytime I do that too much, it always does something.
Really, the two-finger? I love the two-finger scroll. I had to switch up for a while back to a laptop that didn't have it, and it was like somebody cut off one of my arms. It was just, I love the two-finger scroll.
I'll
it's great.
I'll have to go back and
so now it. We have so now we have three-finger zooming.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't need that. My eyes aren't that bad yet.
Go ahead, Jen.
Wouldn't that give you arthritis, too? If your eyes are going bad, you might actually get the arthritis, too, with an extra finger.
Here's the good news, Jason. If your eyes are going bad, you've already got arthritis.
Oh, excellent.
No, not true. That comes next.
I have that to look forward to.
There, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jen.
I'll There's another thing in 10.4.8 that I'm really excited about, and that is I'll finally be able to connect to Comcast, and it will work. Oh. And that means I can scrap my DSL, and I can't wait, because that just doesn't stay
right,
on.
Right. So, also, just, and I'm only going to mention a couple of these. I mean, there's always tons of stuff coming out, but I will. This is one that I'm actually pretty excited about. I haven't actually got to play with yet. That, have you seen this connective? This is from M Audio. This little DJ box. I don't know. I think I put it in the notes. We'll put it in the show notes here. This is the M Audio connective. Now, the only reason I'm talking about this is because I used to be a DJ. I was, you know, the wedding singer. I was the wedding DJ for about 3 years. I did like 300 weddings, and this is the thing that I've been waiting for. So, if you're doing parties or DJing or whatever, this connects. It's actually PC or Mac, but it just came. It was just released, and it allows you to really set up mixes and beat mixes and everything else. You know, it's got this cool little interface, and so I'm hoping to actually experiment with it. But it looks pretty awesome.
Alex, this is one of my favorite things about you.
Yes,
you're no longer a DJ, but you love this DJ box. You don't own a car, but you love the TomTom GPS. You're a very young fellow.
But I don't own a car, but I actually drive in one a lot. So I am the master of rental cars. So I'm only home half the month.
So are you going to, like, pretend to be a DJ?
I am. I'm going to have a party. Okay. I'll invite you all. We'll have a big party, maybe during Macworld or something, and I'll spin some really bad tunes for you from the late 80s. So also, just as a side note for those of you in Topanga, I don't even know where Topanga is. Topanga Canyon Boulevard, Canoga Park. You got a new Apple store coming up this on Saturday.
In the valley, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's in the valley.
It's in the valley, so there should be, yeah, there's, I was going to say something really bad, but I won't.
Not a valley. It's the valley.
The valley.
Like Valley Girl Valley.
Like it's going to be like so great. So anyways.
That is the saddest Valley Girl I have ever heard.
Here's what happened was I stopped halfway.
You DJ for the Valley Girls. You're not one.
So I was going to go full out, and then I decided that was going to sound really bad. So anyway. So that's it. I think that's all I had. Does anyone have any other big news for this week?
What about this thing you put in the notes where the governor of New Jersey is trying to tax iTunes sales? Unbelievable.
Well, I just...
Only in New Jersey.
Only in New Jersey when they're running out of money. Where can we make some money? Well, Apple's making some money. Let's go there. I think the big problem with that, of course, is going to be interstate commerce. You know, you're not... It'll go to the Supreme Court before anyone pays any taxes on it, because you're not... You know, you can't do that right now. I mean,
this is just reason number 2,397 not to live in. Send your email to Alex at. Oh, sorry.
Wait, we just alienated a lot of listeners. That's why I said.
You're making the assumption that everybody who listens from New Jersey loves New Jersey
exactly.
And would defend it. I'm not sure. Knowing who I know who's from New Jersey, I'm not sure.
So no, it's a.
No, we love New Jersey. We kid New Jersey. Yeah,
we're just kidding.
We don't love the governor, but we...
Yeah, exactly. Well, we just think that he's silly and desperate. That's all.
So, yes.
So I think that's about it. Now, Jan, you've got a new podcast, don't you?
I do, and thank you for asking.
What is it called?
It's called PhotoshopOnline.tv. And it's me teaching Photoshop, something I've been doing for, seems like, 100 years, but getting to do it to many more people than I could reach in any other medium. The books I write or the CDs I publish, all that stuff doesn't compare with the number of people that listen to the podcast already in just a month.
Awesome. Well, so definitely check that out. And that's on iTunes, of course. So you can definitely check that out.
Course.
And Scott, of course, has the iLife Zone in addition to this. So,
yeah, we got some big news this week at the Portable Media Expo. We announced that the iLife Zone is now formally a part of the Twit Network,
which is
so that was kind of
fun.
And
so soon you'll be able to find that on twit.tv, and so that's going to be fantastic.
Pretty excited about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And then Jason, of course, you are from Macworld now.
Macworld.com is all you need to know.
And now you guys have your own podcast, right?
Yeah, we do. In fact, I cut Macworld podcast number 55 just this morning.
So,
we do that. And then actually, a bunch of guys who are on our blog site, MacUser.com, they have a podcast too that just started and is pretty cool. That's our blog site, and it's like a couple guys in their 20s and a couple teenagers who are the bloggers, and it's pretty fun to listen to their podcasts because you can sort of see sort of the different stages of puberty that everybody's gone through. It's pretty cool.
I thought you could see that right here, Jason.
Now, did you, Jason, are you recording the podcasts that you guys do at Macworld? Are you doing them all in the office there, or are you doing them spread out? How do you handle that?
Well, you know, we try to do them. We try to get people from the office involved. Although Chris Breen is our regular host and he's out this month, but Cyrus, who used to do it, he was in the office, and I'm in the office doing it now. And a lot of what we do is sort of like this: you get people on Skype, or you get people to do kind of a two-hand record where they, you know, we talk on the phone, but each, you know, participant is actually recording themselves in their own place, and then you kind of stitch it together at the end. And it's been pretty cool because we try to tap all the experts that we've got in-house, but we can also bring people in from around the world over the net, which has actually been a lot of fun. So, but yeah, we do that ourselves, and once Chris is back next month, he'll be picking that up again. And Chris is sort of virtually in the office. He's down in the South Bay, but he's in the family. He might as well be in the office.
And you can get to those podcasts either in iTunes or in from Macworld.com, right?
Yeah, macworld.com/podcast, in fact.
Well, I think that's it. We've come to the end. This is Alex Lindsay. Thanks for coming, and we'll see you next week. And that's it.
Yay.
Hey, guys. Hi. Thanks so much for staying so long.